Kronos were to be centralized here. The departments were all to be controlled from here, from this colony. Of course, the situation changed. You have no idea what I'm talking about, do you, Mr. Carter?
Ryan knew exactly what the commander was referring to, but he figured his best tactic was to play dumb.
A pity. You would have been exceptionally impressed by the elaborate technological marvels we managed to achieve during the last few decades of the 20th century. But you don't have a frame of reference to understand even a fraction of what you're seeing.
As they walked farther into the room, Ryan saw a six-sided chamber. The armorglass walls tinted a greenish blue. The chamber was huge, the biggest Matran's gateway he had ever seen. It looked large enough to accommodate a herd of muti buffalo. As they drew closer to it, Ryan saw a freestanding control console facing the gateway's massive door. He managed to stroll near it, his eye flicking over the dials and buttons studying its surface. A small vid screen was placed directly in its center, and it displayed the interior of a cave, looking out toward an irregularly shaped entrance. Beyond the opening was rock-littered ground. Because the image was in black and white, Ryan couldn't tell the time of day. However, since the illumination was so dim, he assumed it was moonlight, and probably sometime after midnight, maybe close to dawn. A keyboard was attached to the edge of the console, and certain keys bore certain symbols. One key was inscribed with a triangle cut by three straight lines. It was the same symbol they had seen in the installation back in Dulsa.
This way, Mr. Carter. The tour has come to an end.
Ryan was led across the room to a door. A red button was on the frame, which the commander pushed. They stood together in a very small elevator. It descended, but only for a short distance. They stepped out between a pair of bookcases and into the Oval Office. The commander went to his desk and sat down, staring at his prisoner with detachment. Ryan stood in front of the desk, staring back.
Have you nothing to say, Mr. Carter?
What would you like me to say?
That you are impressed, intimidated even, that you have met your master.
Is that what you are?
I am, but I'm interested in hearing you say it.
Why? Will that save my life?
I am afraid not. I toyed with the notion of simply releasing you so you could carry the tale of your experiences back to Hellskell, but I doubt Hellstrom would believe you. Once we locate your companion, she will fill that function adequately. No, I believe I will have you remain here with us.
As a subject for your genetics experiments?
Perhaps.
Or as an organ donor?
Again, perhaps.
Or someone you can turn into a cyborg, another one of your tools.
What else is man but a tool? He has no other value. Humanity is self-destructive, suffering from an anarchy of mind and spirit. Free of the moral deterioration that paves the road to decadence, can you imagine the marvels humanity could accomplish?
I've seen some of your marvels. Shiny toys and freak shows.
In another century, maybe less, this world will cease to be a planet of strife and disorder, wallowing in bloodshed. It will be secure.
The security of the grave. A century ago, you and your kind screwed humanity and left us to pick up the pieces.
Ryan's right hand tugged at the hanging end of his weighted scarf.
The nuclear holocaust was actually a blessing. You have no idea of what it was like a century ago. The world before the Holocaust was totally out of control. Populations of useless people were expanding. Chaos overwhelmed all the old political systems.
Ryan slowly wound the slack of the scarf around his hand.
So you don't care about all the suffering, the horrors, the destruction. It was best for the world to be destroyed, especially since you survived it.
Visionaries are needed, and there are things far beyond your understanding. The seeds planted a long time before are getting ready to take hold of the earth, getting ready for a new future. Novus Ordo Seculorum.
Hellstrom says that Charlie Manson's vision of the future was very much like this one, like your own. How can you feel superior when you share your philosophy with a criminal maniac?
The old world was ending anyway. It couldn't have continued.
Ryan slid the scarf across the back of his neck. The weighted end nestled just below his collarbone. He was ready, and he waited for his chance.
Now every action that affects the course of humanity will be dictated by us. Now, in 100 years or less, all the rules of the world will be my rules. A world you will never see. I am done being your host.
The commander reached across the desk toward a row of inset buttons. Ryan gave the scarf a jerk and whiplashed it across the intervening yards between him and the commander's head. Ryan was around the desk in a second, rewinding the scarf around his hand. The commander lay on his left side on the carpet, one arm beneath him. An ugly, blood-oozing indentation interrupted the unlined smoothness of his forehead. He lay as Ryan had seen many corpses lie, boneless, mouth partly open, eyes wide and glazing over, an expression of shock frozen on his face. Surveying the office, Ryan saw his guns, panga, grens, and ammo clips stacked in a corner behind the desk. Stepping over the body, he grabbed the Walther MPL and Sig Sauer. He then attached the grens to the combat harness he still wore beneath his coat. He decided to put a bullet into the commander's ear, just to make certain. Though the man had said they couldn't transplant the brain, it was remotely possible they could resuscitate him and repair a fractured skull. Ryan's finger tightened on the trigger. Suddenly, the commander's hand streaked up, closing tightly around the barrel of the Sig Sauer and yanking it to one side. Ryan tried to wrest it away, but it was like wrestling with an iron vice.
Killing me will serve little purpose. My death will not affect this place. The work will go on.
For an instant, Ryan believed him, and he almost stopped trying to free the gun from the man's grasp. Then, a boiling anger came fountaining up. His left fist smashed into the pale, unlined face below him. The head bounced against the floor, the nose flattening, blood splattering bright against the white skin. Ryan kicked him in the groin, and as the commander curled around his foot, he loosened his grip on the Sig Sauer. Ryan snatched the pistol away, then stooped over the commander and jammed the pistol against his forehead. Ryan stepped away from the corpse. He rubbed a drop of the commander's blood between thumb and forefinger. It wasn't hot, warm, or even tepid.
Doesn't that just figure?
From the corner of his eye, he caught a shifting movement behind him. He whirled, the Sig Sauer leading the way. One of the tall double doors was opening, pushed from the outside. Doc, Christy, and Floor were still crammed shoulder to shoulder in the back seat. Christy's head rested on Doc's shoulder, in a sleep so deep it was almost a coma. JB figured to follow the AMAX tire tracks to a certain point, then cut over in the general direction of the cave. Trouble was, he wasn't sure how to find that certain point. Worry swirled through his mind like a tornado. Though he hadn't seen one, the AMAC could be outfitted with a shortwave comm unit, and Hellstrom could have already been apprised of their escape. The closer they rolled to Mount Rushmore, the greater the odds of rolling into an ambush. They rode far into the night before they recognized the mouth of the valley that had been the site of their battle with the Lakota. It was about an eighth of a mile away.
If Hellstrom's anywhere about, that's where he's laying.
I concur. He appears to be a creature of habit and probably intends to camp in familiar surroundings, at least until morning. I suggest we improve our haste.
The cave's in that direction.
According to the Armorer's Cron, it was exactly 6 o'clock when the narrow ravine they traveled opened into a canyon. Sheer walls rose to nearly 100 feet on either side, and they were grooved with deep horizontal lines, here and there forming ledges where the softer layers of strata had been eroded away. The canyon floor was less than 200 feet wide, and it wended off to the right to a cave entrance. The opening was a lopsided triangle, 20 or so feet tall, 50 in width. Boulders were strewn all around, except for an unnaturally flat clearing immediately in front of the yawning black cleft carved into the canyon wall. It was about 400 yards away. Carefully, JB steered the dune buggy close to the wall, beneath an overhanging ledge and behind an outcropping. It would be shielded from Hellstrom's side if he came down the canyon, and from any eyes inside the cave. The stony floor was too hard to take their tire treads, so they couldn't be tracked that way.
Front way the only way in?
As far as I know.
You sure this is the place, JB?
Hell no. I'm not sure of anything. But its location fits the general coordinates we saw, and unless somebody can prove otherwise, I'm going to assume this is the right place.
JB scanned their surroundings. because Hellstrom had